The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Cindy Fowler from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Dave's Garden e-newsletter, 1001 Hints and Tips from Reader's Digest, Gardening for the Blind, the Triangle Gardener magazine, and maybe from Yankee Magazine's Pantyhose, Hot Peppers, Tea Bags, and More for the Garden. We'll start with Dave's Garden e-newsletter. This one is Don't Get Buried Under Gardening Chores by Tamara Galbraith. For much of the country, spring is the busiest time of year in the garden. The to-do list can be long and daunting. Post-winter cleanup, fertilizing, planting, etc. Organizing your chores and planning your time wisely will keep you from becoming a stressed-out gardener. Here are some tips. The absolute first thing you should do in spring is walk around your gardens with pad and pencil in hand. Take notes. Make lists. Sketch things out. You might even want to have several pages going at once. For example, one page may contain an ongoing list of all the shrubs in your yard needing trimmed. Another page may contain a list of underachieving perennials needing moved or removed. If you've got indoor plants with needs, add them to the list too. You get the idea. Then, after eyeballing your gardens and making your lists, sit down and add routine seasonal outdoor tasks. Fertilizing, applying nematodes, weed and feed, whatever. Next to these tasks, assign a deadline date. For instance, here in Texas, the window for applying corn gluten meal to the lawn is pretty small, between mid-February and early March. So on my list, I would assign this task a deadline date of March 5th. On a side note, keep in mind any pending mail order plants you've got coming. If you've requested a specific date for delivery, add that date to your list with a projected planting date. It's best to get those babies in the ground soon after they arrive at your house. Then analyze your list and decide which tasks are most critical. Highlighter pens or colored pencils are good for this part. If your tulip bulbs are suddenly underwater, or your brugs are wilted and covered with white flies, or a heavy vine is pulling your fence down, it's time to take action. Give these items a red star to indicate, must do now. Continue to work through the list and rank everything. keeping in mind those previously mentioned seasonal activities with deadlines. If you find one of the deadlines approaching, give it a red star, maybe an orange star for less critical but still fairly urgent. Time for a clean page. Write down all of the red star items. If you've got more than 10, it may be a good idea to enlist some professional help, especially if some of these are big projects. If not, try to take things one item at a time, finishing each one as you go and crossing it off the list. If you're pressed for time, don't panic. Rank only your red star list and knock out the absolutely most critical tasks. Eventually, you'll get there. Let's assume you've completed your red star list and have about 100 less critical chores needing done. Where to start? There are two methods which help me stay focused: gardening by area and gardening by action. Gardening by area is pretty self-explanatory. You simply work on one quadrant of your yard at a time, completing everything that needs done in that space. For instance, last weekend I tackled my Louisiana iris bed. I cleaned out the excess leaves, fluffed the mulch, pulled weeds and grass, divided and replanted a few crowded irises, and watered. All done. Then I went to my vegetable garden by the driveway, completing all the tasks that needed done there. Gardening by action requires a little more self-discipline. I try to employ this method when doing household chores, but it doesn't always work. I still find myself going off in different directions. That's what we're trying to avoid here. So making lists will again help if you choose to take this route. For example, my gardening by action list for this coming weekend is ready. Now, from 1001 Hints and Tips of Your Garden by Reader's Digest, these are things to do in June. Vegetables and herbs. Watch for powdery mildew fungus on squash and cucumbers. Watch for insect pests like stink bugs and spider mites. This is the big harvest season. Pick early in the morning. If eggplants or cucumbers are bitter, it's a sign of plant stress. Keep watering and fertilizing as needed. For tomatoes, seed the fall tomato crop using early maturing and cherry types. This is the end of the season. Pick what's left while still half green to limit insect and bird damage. Watch for leaf-footed stink bugs, spider mites, leaf spot, and fruit rot, and lawns. Maintain a good mowing and watering schedule to keep grass healthy. Leave the grass clippings on the lawn. Apply post-emergent herbicides as needed to control annual weeds. Watch for signs of fungus disease and insect damage. Apply the proper controls of the recommended rates. Give Bermuda grass a light application of slow-release fertilizer. Dethatch Bermuda grass anytime through July. And for patio and container plants, monitor the plants daily for water needs and pest control. Apply water-soluble fertilizer as foliar feed to plants as needed for healthy vigor, usually every 2 to 4 weeks. Pinch back scraggly plants and deadhead spent blooms to maintain a neat appearance. Replace seasonal and failed plants as needed. And now from Gardening for the Blind, tips on planting your garden, getting around in the garden. Getting around in the garden should be your first consideration. Most gardens have a lawn, which is attractive and also cushions accidental falls. However, canes and crutch tips can easily get tangled in the grass. Grass can also hide uneven ground, which can throw you off balance. So it's a good idea to use some sort of paving for navigating in the garden or landscape. Paths and paved areas should be smooth, level, and firm. They should always have good traction. Wood, for example, becomes very slippery when wet. provide direct routes through the garden, and make sure paths have clear beginnings and ends. Include wind chimes, fountains, or other objects you can hear so you can orient yourself in the garden more easily. Path edges should have distinct differences in texture, such as concrete to grass or bricks to a mulched bed, so you can direct the edges, so then you can detect the edges. Use a strip with a change in texture across the path to indicate an entrance to the patio, a tree with interesting bark, or a clump of particularly fragrant plants. The strip should be about 12 to 18 inches wide and can be made from a contrasting paving material, such as a brick strip across a crushed stone path. Avoid raised edging, which can create a tripping hazard. Working in the garden. Making the easy to work in is the next consideration. Raised beds and containers make it easy to reach the soil and the plants. Raised beds are stable and heavy enough for you to sit on the edge or lean on for support. White canners can be moved, while containers can be moved and take up less room. These structures also cut down the number of special tools you'll need to tend your garden. Avoid structures with sharp corners and edges. The right tools are also important. You'll need to select tools that are durable, lightweight, and easy for you to use. Some tools, like garden trowels, will have engraved markings to indicate soil depth, making it easier to determine how deep to plant bulbs and other transplants. And now from the Triangle Garden magazine, Plant Focus, Snowbells by Mark Wethington. Snowbells, or Styrax, S-T-Y-R-A-X, are a group of flowering trees and shrubs native to warm, temperate, and tropical regions around the world, with the largest diversity in Southeastern Asia. The 170 or so species have pendulous, mostly white flowers, and some have outstanding fragrance. The gray-green, smooth fruits on many snowbells are quite attractive, if understated as well. Despite the number of species, only a few have made their way into gardens. The most widely grown, Styrax japonicus, the Japanese snowbell, makes an upright, rounded to a wide-spreading tree with masses of late spring bell-like blossoms. The flowers emerge after the leaves and show up brightly against the dark green foliage. One of the most popular selections is Emerald Pagoda, an upright form with larger leaves and flowers than typical. Exciting new selections have come on the market in recent years, including Fragrant Fountain, a weeping form with scented flowers. Evening Light, a somewhat shrubby plant, adds season-long color with dark purple foliage that makes the pure white flowers really pop. While the Japanese snowbell is the main player in gardens, a few other species can often be found through mail order or by request at garden centers. The chains of heavily scented flowers of the fragrant snowbell, Styrax abasia, will fill an entire garden with its aroma. The plant's foliage is somewhat coarser, with larger leaves on it, an upright plant. Less widely grown but still quite attractive is our native Styrax americanus, which grows throughout the southeast, usually in flood plains and other moist woodland settings. It makes a bushy plant, somewhat open compared to other species, but well suited for natural gardens. One exceptional form of our native snowbell is baby blue with silverly blue foliage. No matter which snowbell you grow, you are guaranteed an elegant addition to the garden, where the striking flowers bridge the gap between early spring bloomers and the summer flowering tree species. Snowbells, in general, are easy to grow in most garden settings once established. And from Dave's Garden e-newsletter, Dave's Garden website, Edges, Chicken Fat, and Eyes, Oh My! By Mitch Fitzgerald. In all the plant world, there is one flower known for its eyes, edges, and every so often you find some wonderful chicken fat edges. What is this wonder of the plant world? This wonderful flower is none other than the wonderful daylily. Daylilies and the sun go hand in hand. Some of the darker daylilies cannot take the full daytime sun, but they still need at least 6 hours of sunlight. They are very forgiving plants. They love the heat and will even take a little dryness if they are planted in the right areas. Daylilies will grow in any soil, but I have seen here that they spread faster in soils with more sand and stay in smaller, tighter clumps if they are in clay soils. Daylilies love compost, and this is the only thing that I give my daylilies to feed them. They love the extra food, and I don't have to worry about adding chemicals to my yard. Keep the soil moist in the blooming season, but not overly wet. Daylilies that stay too dry will not put on a show of blooms, but, on the other hand, daylilies that sit in water will rot in the soil. The best way to do this is to care for the soil first with lots of compost or manure in the soil to help it drain faster. Take care of your soil also by placing mulch over the soil after you plant the daylilies. Mulch will keep the weeds down and help to keep the soil moist. Weeds are a major factor when you are dealing with daylilies. Some weeds might find the daylily patch the perfect place to hide. One major offender in some areas is Bermuda grass, which in a mature bed cannot be hoed or killed out, but must be pulled. Still, once established in a large area, you will not have to worry about very many weeds. Daylilies come in all colors except all blue and all white. The color of the bloom will differ in garden to garden, and even from one section of the garden to the next. A bloom that looks strongly white in the show garden might look yellow, tan, or even pink in your garden. The designs in the flowers and strong mixes of colors available in daylilies make them a wonderful plant to have and grow in the garden. A word of caution should be mentioned about daylily seeds. On many well-known auctions, you can buy seeds of great daylilies. What is not said in these auctions is that the seeds will never grow into the same plant as the mother plant. Planting seeds of daylilies will give you wonderful new plants that might bloom stunning flowers that everyone wants, or might give you the ugly duckling of the daylily world. If you are looking for a daylily, it is well worth the effort to go out and buy the plant you are looking for rather than growing from seed. You can turn an old colander into a hanging basket. Line it with landscape fabric, pantyhose, or a thin layer of sphagnum peat moss before putting in your soil and plants. Hang it up using raffia, scrap galvanized wire, or old baling twine. A bowl, especially a pretty ceramic one, can make a beautiful hanging planter. Use a diamond drill bit to drill a drainage hole or two in the bottom. Then carefully drill three holes along the rim and thread strong twine or wire through the holes, twisting it together at the top and making a loop for hanging on a hook or apt for a cradle of twine or wire rather than drilling holes to suspend the bowl. Toys on parade. After the kids have left home and you have all their wonderful toys stashed in the attic or elsewhere, collect them and turn them into a little botanical remembrance of some of your favorite people. Start with the toy box, which will make a terrific planter. Fill it to the brim with soil and plants. Then position an old dump truck, a small wagon, or a miniature baby buggy at its base to use as a smaller container garden. Use an old baseball bat as a plant support inside the box, making sure you plant it deep enough to keep it steadily upright. Use plastic dolls, building blocks, trains, and other assorted toys as accents in and around this child-inspired garden. Clever retailers sell decorative pot feet to keep pots up off decks and patios where they can stain or rot the building material. You can have all the benefits of these little feet without the expense by scouring your house for appropriate non-corroding materials, such as chipped or otherwise unusable saucers, old custard cups, plastic jar or jug lids, such as those for peanut butter jars or liquid laundry detergent bottles, leftover ceramic tiles stacked a few tiles high. A leaky metal watering can makes a fun container for planting. Just fill with soil and plant. You can also use a cracked plastic watering can. If necessary, drill or punch a few drainage holes in the bottom and get planting. The next time your bird bath goes to pot with a leaky basin or broken pedestal, turn the basin into a nifty planter. If it's concrete and cracked, there's no need to do anything, just plant. Alpines and sedums especially love this environment. Metal or other watertight basins will need a few drainage holes drilled in the bottom. And that pedestal, if it's still intact and suitably designed, put it on your porch or tuck it into a flower bed and put a flower pot on top. Turn a no longer used but attractive plastic waste basket into a strawberry jar-inspired planter. Using a paring knife heated over a flame, cut holes about 3 inches across into the waste basket sides, spacing them at least 4 inches apart to allow for plenty of root growth. Also, cut a small drainage hole in the bottom. Fill the basket with potting mix and add your strawberry plants. Those large buckets that pet food or cat litter come in make terrific plant containers. Just punch a few holes in the bottom of each for drainage. A Phillips screwdriver heated over a flame works well. Then paint them with a spray paint for plastic. You could also decorate the containers by hot gluing small stones or flat marbles to the sides in creative patterns. Rust bonanza. On walks, drives, and yes, visits to the landfill, you come across an amazing array of tin cans, hubcaps, and other pieces of metal, especially in desert areas. Often these objects are beautiful in their decay. The rust and dings give them a sense of age and a patina you can't recreate with paint or sandpaper. Collect these metal treasures to use as planters for succulents or for gray-leaved plants, which look fabulous against a rust-colored background. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Cindy Fowler, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service.
The purpose of the North Carolina Reading Service is to connect people who are blind and print impaired with each other, their families, and the community by delivering news, information, and entertainment using the latest audio technology. If you have questions or comments, please give us a call at 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. You can also visit our website at ncreadingservice.org. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.